KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Welcome, folks, and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking the Good Gardening Stroll shortly, but right now you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with questions, comments, concerns, or whatever it happens to be about the outdoors. And James will be answering your phone call. All he needs is your first name and where you're calling from. He doesn't need to know what you're calling about or anything else. Mr. Kelly, before you take off.
Sure.
It's been very, 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 very dry. So how is your garden doing?
Doing well. We watered it. As Sue always says, Mike says, what is it, 20 minutes once a week or something like that?
No. Much longer than that.
Oh, half hour?
Yeah.
Half hour? Okay.
Whatever it takes to get an inch of water per week.
Okay. Well, she tells me, and I do it. and so we did that. We got the sprinkler out the other day. We're going with the potted plants going out every afternoon, sometimes in the morning, whatever, making sure they're all watered. And so far, so good. The one that we're having trouble with is a fuchsia. And I think we have it in the sun too much. Also, so it's going into the shade now.
Yeah, they don't like it here anyway.
Yeah. Oh, really?
No, they don't do well here.
Why do they look so pretty at the nursery?
Because they're in a specific type of greenhouse, which makes them look nice. So in other words, if what you should do is if you know somebody in Southern California, ship it to them. That's where they do really well. God,
they're so pretty.
Yeah, they are nice.
Ah, well, we're going to try anyway.
Good luck.
Yeah, we're going to. So
I fool around with different stuff, too.
So that's his advice. The garden guy's advice is ship it to California. Boy, thanks, Mike.
I try to be truthful.
Well, that's important. You're honest. You could have said, oh, yeah, it'll be great. Yeah. So, okay, I appreciate it. All right.
Either that or put an air conditioning dome over it.
Okay. Well, we'll bring it inside.
Cool.
Yeah, here we go. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
All right.
Oh, well. Can we take it back if we have the receipt?
Yes.
Okay.
Especially if it's all beat up.
We'll beat it up.
All right. Folks, on Saturday morning, we get together and have a roundtable discussion about what's impacting your side yard. What's going on in that front yard, that area around your mailbox? Why do you think you need to have a planting around your mailbox? And if you live in the city, you don't have mailboxes for the most part. You have mail slots in your house. Anyway, specialty garden space, the taste of the tropics, houseplants, what is potting mix, and how good is potting mix versus potting soil? How to improve your soil before you do any planting? That's what Brian Kelly did. They spent a lot of time getting their soil ready before they got their garden planted. What's going on with bugs, diseases, and using the information that I'll share with you to orchestrate the best decision and solidify your options, or just say, the heck with that guy on the garden hotline. I don't care what he says. I'm going to do it my way because my way is my way. And by the way, this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home, car, or wherever you happen to be listening. Another very important player, as I said before, is James. He's producing today. He's across the big board. He does all the buttons and everything else because they tell me, don't touch any buttons because I might screw up the system. Anyway, I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And during the week or weekends, I can come to your home and do a walk and talk where we take a look at various things that you have on your list. And also, I keep my eyes open for things that might be impacting your plant material, your landscape, or whatever it happens to be. This past week, I was in Columbia, Illinois, and great house. These people they've really done some great work, and it was very, very nice. And then today, after the show, I'm headed over to Belleville and then down to Waterloo. So kind of a streak of Illinois, which is great. And what you can do is go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number where I can be reached. And probably easier if you did the email, because phone numbers sometimes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. But anyway, it's up to you. It's your choice. Well, let's get moving. Today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Historically, on the first day, or at least within the first week of season change, I do a good gardening stroll around my landscape. So today is the first day of summer. And man, I stepped outside. I could barely breathe. It was so hot. Anyway, after a nice, cool, wet and wet spring, well, lately it's been dry and dry. So keep watering. I went out on Wednesday after I got back from my appointment and walk and talk in Columbia. And I was just messing around. I wondered how, you know, I could tell there are certain areas where how dry the soil was. But I thought, I'm going to try it over here. And I have a weeder tool, which is kind of like a really long extended screwdriver that you drive into the ground, you pop the plants up. I mean, I'm not weak, but I'm not super strong. I'm not like Brian Kelly, who's, you know, a weightlifter and all that other stuff. But anyway, I could barely push this weeder into the soil. It was so dry. So, of course, then I got the watering going. And today after I get back from Waterloo, I'm going to be watering again. So anyway, the tour de my yard, east to west. The alley beds, I have cone flowers, which I probably have planted the original ones, maybe only two or three, maybe 10 years, maybe not quite 10 years, but close to it. And they're probably 4 feet high now. And there's probably maybe 200 flowers in bloom right at this moment. And it's a striking pose. And also what I put in there at that time for a different sort of texture-wise and different just look in general and fragrance, lemon verbena. Lemon verbena has gotten a little bit more aggressive than what I preferred with invasiveness. So I'm going to start taking some of that out. Also in the bed, there is some sedum gold moss, and it weaves in and out and all around all the other things. There's also two beds along the alley that I have the gold moss in there and some sweet alyssum. Next, going west along the street, there was an area street-wise between the street and the sidewalk that was zoysia. And the zoysia was never successful there. So I'm converting it one step at a time with sedums, sweet alyssums, yellow money wort. Some people call that something yellow creeping Jenny or something like that. That just creeps me out, so I don't say creeping Jenny. But anyway, in my backyard, lawn looks pretty darn good. I have pots on the hardscapes in my backyard. The plantings include moss rose, verbenas, moonflowers, elephant ears, cannas of three different varieties, herbs, castor beans. By the back door, I have three different varieties of calla lilies and some dahlias and some purple heart, Tradescantia, and spider plants. I like flowers. They're great. You know, I can look at flowers when I walk around or wherever it happens to be, but I'm really into different textures and colors of the foliage. And a lot of times what I do with containers and pots, I use tropical plants versus annuals because the tropical plants have a lot of colorful foliage type things. So my dahlias and I have a lot of gazing balls floating around in my landscape as well. Mugo pine, sedum gold moss underneath it, and a purple coral bells, two different varieties of hostas. Then I have two big pots of my Aunt Cleo's Kaffir lilies. When I first moved back to St. Louis from California, back in 77, she had this Kaffir lily, and she said, well, would you like it? I said, sure. So here it is since 77. How many years is that? So many years, I can't even think. But anyway, I got more Kaffir lilies, and I've given so many away through the years. Window boxes, I have the purple heart and, you know, the spider plants as well. Near the front door, a dwarf cypress. And then I have pots all over the place that also repeat, the things that I've mentioned also. And I like Rex begonias. Why? Because my middle name is Rex. So I thought, why not have Rex begonias if you're Rex Michael Rex? So that's what I do. A couple boxwoods, Labani cypress tree. I have three sugar maples which wrap around the corner of the street. And I have gold moss underneath them and sweet alyssum as well as a ground cover. Front yard lawn looks pretty good. Small patio there where I have elephant ears and cannas as well. And probably 2 weeks ago or so, I went out and I thought, what is this? And let's see, probably like 3 weeks ago, I talked about a little neighborhood kind of wedge garden space where they had a lot of small stones that were painted. And I mentioned that during my good gardening stroll. In some way, one of those stones, not necessarily specifically from there, has ended up on my front porch. So I have this little tiny stone that's probably 2 inches across, been hand-painted, and then it has a little crystal on the corner of it. It's like, I don't know who gave it to me or whatever, but I certainly thank you for thinking of me and bringing that over to my house. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Yes, folks, to the phones we go. And if you do have any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We're headed to Kirkwood for our first call and into Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Mike, I have a question for you that you may not have been asked before. Every year, I have two hummingbird feeders that go outside of my window in my kitchen, and I will tell you this year, with them all cleaned up and the right amount of sugar water in them, I have not seen one hummingbird. What's going on with the hummingbirds?
I don't know. They must have changed their route. You know, if historically you've had the hummingbirds, obviously you wouldn't be putting the feeders out. But Brian Kelly's had a lot. I've seen a few in our neighborhood. Why you're not getting them right there, you know, who knows what it is. The wind, the directions, you know, there's no way to know.
Isn't that something? Boy, I'll tell you, those are quite a specimen, and I really enjoy watching them. But I've not seen one yet this year.
Yeah, what you might do is go online and look at the Audubon Society and see if there's, you know, an area in this region that has had, you know, a shift in where the hummingbirds are going or anything else, because you know they're migratory, so they only come through and then they, you know, then they're gone again and then they come back through this direction. So if you haven't had them yet, I don't know if Brian's still having them or not right now, but I've seen them not a whole lot, but you know, we don't get them all that much in South City, but get a few, and I haven't seen any probably in maybe 1 to 2 weeks now.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that's really kind of amazing.
Thanks for the advice. I always enjoy listening to you.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. Let's head now over to Greg's yard. Hi, Greg. Hello, Greg? Greg, are you there? No. So let's skip Greg and go to Arlene.
Hi. Hi, Mike. I have two questions. Do you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, okay. My first question is poinsettia. I want to have it bloom next year. It's lost most of all its red leaves, but I'm getting a lot of green leaves. Now, what do I do to save it for Christmas?
Basically, you want to just grow it like a normal type of tropical houseplant, you know, annual or whatever. So, you know, fertilize it, take care of it, do everything. And then when September rolls around, then that's when you're going to start altering it. You're going to bring it inside, give it 12 hours of dark, 12 hours of, you know, light, and that sort of thing.
Oh, well, that's easy to do. My second thing is, I think it was last week, you talked about propagating hydrangeas, and I've been successful in doing it this way. I take a lower branch, you know, one that's close to the ground,
sure,
and I dig the ground a little bit to make it loose, and I lay the stem into that dug up dirt,
right,
and put dirt on top of it. Then I put a brick on top of that to hold it down.
Right.
And you know, I've been successful in getting little plants with the roots.
That works very well, and it's I mean, that technique is, I forget exactly what it's called, but you can do it with a lot of various types of shrubs. So you,
uh-huh,
it's great that you've done it and you've had great success with it.
Yes. Well, that's because those people, whoever called in, didn't know what to do.
Right.
Uh-huh. All right, Mike, thank you.
Certainly. And now let's go to Fred, and Fred lives in Maryland Heights. Hi, Fred.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Very good.
I had you out several years ago on a hillside or a slope in my backyard that you helped with the walk and talk and some different plants. Last year, I had a China boy or China girl holly that died on the hill, and this year I have a knockout rose that is doing the same thing, and they're the only plants on the hill that are affected. Do you have any thoughts or ideas on that?
My guess is probably that particular spot where those two particular shrubs are or were or whatever. All this really wet springtime we had, water collected around it and probably drowned the root systems.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah, if you pull those out and put new ones back in there, just make sure that you plant where the top 20% of the root ball is higher than the surrounding ground.
Okay, yeah, because everything else is doing fine, and I really love it. So, all right, we'll try that, and we certainly appreciate your program.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it. And now let's go to Steelville. Hi, Steelville. Hi. Good gardening. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a Carl Bark Japanese maple tree. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Leaves started coming out about a half an inch, and now they're all dead.
That's not a good sign. So again, probably how old is the plant? How long has it been in the ground?
Well, it's been there probably 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. My guess is, again, this springtime rain has really done some damage to, you know, well-established plant materials. So that's what happened. It just didn't, you know, pushed out. The buds were set like last fall, pushed out this spring, and then the root system got drowned. And the coral bark, the coral bark variety is not exactly a great variety for this region as far as hardiness goes anyway.
So I might as well dig it up and throw it away then, right?
Pretty much. I mean, you could leave it, you know, and see what happens next year if you want to. But if it's not having, if it doesn't have any foliage at all that has come out, what happens is nutrients and, you know, water come up from the root system, go to the leaves, which uses sun, whether in the shade or in the sun, and makes chlorophyll, which is food. And when there's no food being produced, then that's going to impact, you know, anything that's still viable underneath the ground that might still be alive. So it's going to be a roll of the dice if there's any kind of life left in it at all.
I've got some knockout roses. They're turning brown on me. Is there anything to do with that?
Just turning brown all over, or turning brown just certain stems?
Just all over.
Ooh. Again, that doesn't sound good. You know, they should be vigorous. They should be doing well. Yes, we had a lot of rain. They, you know, if they were planted correctly, which it sounds like you know what you're doing, and you probably did that. But yeah, if they're brown all over in the foliage, and that's not a good sign either for those.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Yep. And now let's go to Debbie in Florissant. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, I have a Kwanzaa cherry tree, and we just noticed about there's two branches, or little branches sticking out, and these really thick webs, just real tight, and they're just really different than any kind of, I guess it's a spider web. Any thoughts on that?
It might be, you know, some kind of caterpillar. Look at it really closely, but just go out there and basically take a stick or whatever, take your hand, and just pull the webbing off.
Oh, well, the branches where it's surrounded are dying. They're almost dead. So should we just cut the whole thing off? And
well, it's the branches, you know, generally that's not what, this is probably a webworm. So you could cut it off if you want to. If you're going to cut it off, I don't know how long it is. If it's long, cut it off in, you know, one-third sections at a time, making the final cut, leaving a stub of about a quarter to a half inch only wherever it's connected.
And then should we spray anything? Will that take care of it?
Preventative spraying does not help with the insects, no.
Okay.
You can get a systemic insecticide, but depending upon how big this tree is, it could take a long time before systemic insecticide, which you put basically on the ground, watered in, and then comes up through the root system and goes out over the branches and would kill insects that way. But it's, you know, that's a long, involved process.
Okay. Thank you for your help.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Great. Yeah, these fall webworms and, you know, other kind of webworms, you know, this is the time of year where they're going to start showing up. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Yes, folks, we're jumping the river over to Swansea and going into Brenda's yard. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Mike. Happy Father's Day, kid.
Well, thanks.
Okay, I have some portulaca, which is so easy to grow, and
yes.
I've had it for years. But this year, when I planted it in a dry spot, I got all the green, but I get no hardly any flowers in the spot. And I've even got some in a pot, and there's not one flower in there. What's wrong this year?
I don't know what's going on, but I have portulaca too, and mine was flowering when I got it. And I do have some that self-seed and actually come back on their own. They're still not flowering. And the ones that I got at the nursery, you know, this earlier this spring, like I said, initially were flowering, but they haven't reflowered yet. So I'm not exactly sure what's happening with them. I've fertilized. I've done everything according to what that guy on, you know, KMOX Garden Hotline says. And I'm not having any luck with it. So I don't know what's going on. So my only, you know, my only guess is just patience as much as anything. Because the foliage
I planted these in early spring. Yeah. I mean, they've been in the ground a long time.
Right. I mean, the foliage looks good, I'm assuming, because mine looks really great. They look really bushy.
Mine does, too.
And so I don't know what's going on.
Well, now, I know they lack dry soil. Do you think watering in them more would make a difference?
Well, I water mine. I have them in pots and stuff. And it's, like I said, I'm not getting any flowers on them. I got them in two different pots. And the location's kind of in close proximity, but not not next to each other. And so I don't know. It's just going to have to be a matter of patience, I think.
No. Well, okay, then I'll have to do that. Be patient. Thank
exactly.
you so much.
Right. Sorry. Yeah, it's just I can't figure it out either. Tracy came out, you know, a couple weeks ago and said, wow, look, you know, she was looking at the porch a lot because she doesn't know the botanical names or anything. But she said, those red flowers really look great. And I said, yeah, they really look nice. Then once those flowers finished, we haven't had any more flowers at all. Let's go to Greg, and Greg lives in the city of St. Louis. Hi, Greg.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good.
I'm having trouble with my rose bushes, but the problem is, I mean, they were blooming just fine. All of a sudden, like, all the blooms died off, and, like, the leaves just have, the petals just have holes all through them. Could wasps be doing that? Because I noticed there are a lot of wasps around the rosebush plant.
Generally, it's not. My guess is probably a fungal-type disease, so like anthracnose or something along that line, which impacts lots of different things, but roses is one of the things it impacts. So the holes are just a result of, like, the fungus right there kind of burning a hole in. But roses flush, you know, and so consequently cut off all the spent blooms, do some fertilizing with rose food, and just wait for a couple weeks, and they should be reblooming. So thanks, Greg, and good luck with that. And now let's go to Murfreesboro and into Gene's yard. Hi, Gene.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I'm going to make your first caller a little upset. I have about 40 Hummers in my yard. I feel for him. Boy, it's wonderful. One quick question.
Sure.
This is the first year I've ever had coleus. Do you recommend pinching the flowers off so they spread out more? And the same thing with hosta. Do you recommend cutting the flowers off of hosta?
Hosta doesn't matter because, I mean, they're tough. They're perennial. But with the coleus, definitely don't let them go to flower because then they're going to start losing all the lower leaves. Also, you know, pinch them back just besides taking the flowers off to make them thicker and denser and bushier. And the coleus generally do not like to be in full sun. They want to be in part sun,
right.
So as long as you got them in that, they really root. I mean, they do grow well in water, so don't let them go through any kind of drought stress whatsoever.
Thank you much, sir. Yeah,
my pleasure. And also, could you send some of your hummingbirds over to the guy in Kirkwood? He's the one that doesn't have any hummingbirds. Could 10 of you go to Kirkwood from Murfreesboro? Let's see. Where should we go now? Let's go to Tom's yard, and he lives in St. Louis. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Mike. Hey, I have a question about watering my tropical hibiscus. I have a row of 9 at the edge of my yard that drops off to an 18-inch retaining wall, so I'm assuming there's good drainage, and they're flowering prolifically, good green growth, but I have some yellow leaves at the bottom and inside some of the plants. I water them all the same. I'm wondering, you know, what I've read is they can turn yellow from too much water or underwatering, and I wanted some ideas. They're in full sun. They basically look great, but are some yellow leaves normal?
Yeah. Basically, regardless of even if you're watering correctly, you're fertilizing and doing everything, those are just older leaves. And the hibiscus is going, you're not really helping me, and blah, blah, blah. And so it drops them. turns them yellow. So this is just a natural occurrence.
How much would you recommend watering them in the summer? Should they get daily water?
No, you don't need to water them that much, but just make sure that they don't, you know, and let me put it this way. If you look out and you see them wilted and it's the heat of the day, don't water them right then. Wait until the next morning and see if they're wilted in the next morning. If they're wilted in the morning, that means they definitely need water. If they're wilted only during the day and then they perk back up, you know, overnight or in the morning, then they don't. But, you know, they do need, you know, water, but you don't have to overwater them. Every day would be a lot, but probably every 2 or 3 days and just give them a good soaking. Are they still in pots or are they in the ground?
No, they've been in the ground for about a month.
Okay.
And like I said, overall, they look great, but I get some yellow leaves inside.
Yeah, that's just a natural occurrence. There's nothing you
okay.
can do about that.
All right, great. Thanks a lot.
Certainly. My pleasure. And now let's go to Glenn's yard in Columbia, Illinois. Hi, Glenn.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate your show. I'm taking down a great big, professionally having it taken down, a big gumball tree.
Ooh.
And I've got two and a half questions about that hole. I'm going to have it ground. How close can I plant the replacement tree? What type of a tree would you recommend? What, you know, what species grows fast? I'm an old guy, so I don't want to sit there for 50 years and wait for it. And should I fill that hole with topsoil? Should I fill it with compost, or should I just let it settle?
Basically, the stump grindings, that area probably within, I don't know how large this sweet gum tree was, but if you go out maybe probably 10 feet, you might be able to plant something, but anything any closer, it's basically solid wood underneath the ground. So I wouldn't plant it, try to get anything established. And if
okay.
you want, if you, and you want a shade tree that's fast growing?
Yes, sir.
And probably the fastest growing shade type tree, which is a little bit problematic in its own right, would be the river birch. And because I'm saying problematic in the fact that, you know, when it starts getting hot in the summertime, they start dropping leaves. But that's going to be probably the fastest growing, you know, shade tree that is available. There is another maple, the silver maple, not the red maples or anything else, is also fast growing. But I don't, on it, I'm not even sure if the silver maple is available from a retail standpoint.
I see. Okay, and the hole, should I fill that with topsoil or just let it settle? And
I would
that?
Probably just leave it alone. Maybe put a bird bath on it or something, or a rock or whatever it happens to be, because it's going to take a long, long, long time for that whole thing, for the sort of the wood qualities to implode. So putting oh. soil on top of it's not going to make any difference.
Okay.
Should we leave the stump grindings in the hole until they settle or take it out?
I would probably just take them out, and that's just strictly a cosmetic type thing. So
okay.
you don't have to do that, but it's if you don't, then you're always going to go out there and stare at them, and that way
okay.
save you the trouble of staring.
Dispose of the grindings. And okay.
Right.
Thank you very, 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 very much for
yeah.
your help.
And don't use those grindings as mulch on anything, because that's fresh wood. It binds up moisture, it binds up nutrients, and causes major problems. That's why you can't just take let's say chippers, you know, from trees that have been taken off power lines and stuff like that. You can't use that debris as mulch either. So don't use this as mulch. Just get rid of it. You can put it in a compost pile and let it compost, but not just spread it around. And now let's see, get one more call before we take a break, and let's go to Steve's yard, and he lives in Collinsville. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick question for you. I have a beard's tongue in my yard, and I really like it. It's past its flowering time, and I was just wondering, do I leave the blossoms, do I leave it intact? Can I cut the blossom part off, the stem part to the blossom? What would be the best to do, just leave it or cut them off?
It doesn't really matter, because they're perennial, they're pretty tough, but probably from an aesthetic standpoint, I'd just go ahead and cut the flower, you know, stem off.
Mike?
Yes.
I didn't hear you.
Oh. I would say, since they're a perennial plant, you don't need to worry about it. You can
Great.
Cut the flowers off, you know, the flower stem off. That's what I would do, just from an aesthetic standpoint, so you don't have to see that stem just sort of sticking out. So,
Right.
that's, you know, that would be my recommendation.
Wonderful. I will do that. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Head to High Ridge and go into David's yard. Hi, David.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple questions about, I got some banana trees in the ground, and I need to get rid of some Japanese beetles. They're eating the tops of the leaves. What could I put on them?
Basically, Japanese beetle, I mean, they're kind of tough. You're probably better off if you only see a few of them, just to pick them off and put them, you know, drown them in like a soapy water type thing. If you want to try to spray them, realize the insecticides have to hit the beetles directly. And if to spray as a preventative type thing, that's not going to make any difference at all. So if you don't see the beetle and squirt the insecticide on it right then you've just kind of wasted your time. So in other words, picking them off, that would be my recommendation, because there can't be a huge amount, I wouldn't think.
No, there's not.
Yeah. So I would recommend that. If you want to use an insecticide, I'd use insecticidal soap and just, you know, trigger spray right in their face.
I got you. Okay. I got one more question about majestic palms. They're in pots. And what would be should I fertilize them, and how much should I water them?
Keep them pretty well watered because they're in pots. You know, water them, so obviously they got drainage holes, so it's going to run out.
Yes.
And
yes.
Just wait, you know, probably when the potting mix starts to shrink a little bit from the inside of the pot, away from the, you know, the actual pot, then water them, and hopefully you don't have them in the full sun, because they will sunburn.
They will sunburn.
Yeah.
Okay. And no fertilization on
it? No, you can fertilize them probably, you know, during this active growing season, fertilize them virtually monthly all the way up until September.
What would you suggest on fertilizing?
It doesn't really matter.
13,
just, yeah,
12.
Miracle-Gro, like, you know, 12, 4, 8, something along that line.
Okay. All right. Perfect.
Good luck.
That's all I got.
All right. Perfect. And now let's go to Collinsville, and that's where Gail lives. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Very good.
Happy Father's Day to you.
Thank you.
I have a comment and a question. I heard you say earlier when you get stump ground out and
right.
all the trimmings, not to use it as mulch, but I did in my woodland garden, and it hasn't affected anything out there. They're mostly hostas, but so far, so good. That was last year in, I forget when.
Well, it's just not recommended to do. So you were lucky.
Right.
The hostas are very tough. But what it does is it binds up nutrients and stuff, and hosta don't, I mean, they're, like I say, they're tough. They don't need a whole lot of nutrients.
I see. Okay. Well, I'm probably lucky, yeah, having it around the hostas then.
Right.
Okay, now my question. Last year in April, we had a main borderline spring leak, which, of course, I found out when I got my bill, which was triple. And they had to dig a trench, you know, from the house out to the meter.
Sure.
And change it. And I have three river birch trees, which I heard you mention this morning. And they're three individual trees, but we planted them in one hole so they would each have their own root system.
Mm-hmm.
And the water line trench was about 6 feet away from the one side of the base of the trunk on that side. And the width of the three trees now have grown together. They're about 3 feet, maybe a little more. So the rest of last year, the leaves and everything looked fine. And they had sprouted out this spring. And I'd say now I can tell there's maybe 10% of the limbs throughout the trees, all three of them, don't have any leaves. And they're not as plentiful on the tree limbs as they normally had been, which I can kind of expect. It's under a little bit of stress after
right.
going through that, having some roots ripped off and stuff that close. But I just wanted to get your best educated guess about the life of the tree now.
I think the trees are fine. It's just, it's not only the trench and everything else tearing up the root system, but also whatever kind of equipment, whatever kind of people, you know, compacting the soil. So there's been a lot of different things that have impacted this tree or these trees. So yeah. It's more physical than anything. So you're just going to have to let them stabilize. Maybe during the wintertime, do something called deep root feeding, where you go out a couple feet from the tree trunks. You auger holes with an electric drill, backfill those holes, 6-inch deep holes.
We did that around some willow oak trees, so just, they needed some iron.
Right, just do that again with around these guys, and it'll help loosen the soil and help reduce the compaction and also add some organic matter down into the holes.
Okay, what would you suggest putting in there?
Compost.
Oh, compost.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, we can do that. Any certain time during the winter?
Basically, any time after the foliage has fallen. So let's say November through the Ides of March.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. Okay, thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
Certainly. My pleasure. Yes, and folks, we won't get a chance to get another call in before we go to the news. But I'm going to reemphasize this. It's been very, very, very dry. So even, I have a lot of sedum acre or gold moss, whatever you want to call it. And when it gets really dry, even though sedum is supposed to be able to handle really dry, it discolors. It really loses its green. And as soon as I water, then it's going to get the green back. So it's just a question of, other plant material is going to stress out a lot more than what some types of sedum are going to do as well. And when I was walking the other day, I was surprised at seeing how many sort of those aggressive weeds that show up in lawns and park areas and stuff like that. Even they were wilted down. So it is very dry out there. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will see you after the news.
KMOX and your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Now, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, I say welcome as well to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour, which I'll be giving shortly. But right now, you can call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with your ideas, questions, concerns, or comments. And Mr. Kelly, it's really warm out there, but you're wearing very dark colors.
Oh, I got dressed in the dark.
So you can't see.
No, what was it, 4 a.m? I don't care. Just find something. Just put it on. I'm wearing black on black.
Right.
Blue on. Well, this is dark blue.
Oh.
And navy. And that's kind of grayish.
As soon as you step outside, you're going to be sweating.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in the newsroom, I got to get my coat because it's cold in the newsroom. Yeah.
Right.
So
they keep you guys chilled.
They do. It slows the aging process. I appreciate that.
Anyway, I was just concerned that it's so hot and you're wearing dark colors that just doesn't.
No,
make
I'll
sense.
Change when I get outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Thanks for your concern.
Folks, and by the way, thanks for having me on your show. We're here to discuss plant selections, caring for, ups and downs, and all arounds related to the annuals, to your bulbs, to the edibles, to the ground covers, to the house plants, lawns, roses, perennials, trees, shrubs, vines, and water gardens. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Across the big board is James. He's producing today. And so when you call, just give him your first name and where you're calling from. That's all he needs to know. And during the week, I spend my time where I do a walk and talk. I come to your home. We look at aesthetic problems. We look at problem solving for plant materials and everything else. And today, after the show, I'm headed to Belleville and then over to or down to Waterloo. So spending my early afternoon, late morning in Illinois. And you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. The homepage, that's where my email and phone number are listed. And if you go to the homepage, other pages there, I'm not keeping up with it very well. Oh, well. Anyway, you can contact me. We'll share, and I'll come to your home and share 40 years of experience. Tip of the Trowel is a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me. And it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. One of Tracy and my favorite places to go is the Butterfly House, which is out in Faust Park. The Sophia M. Sachs Butterfly House will reopen June 16th. We're past the 16th, so it's already reopened. And it will start basically, you got to make an appointment. It's going to be guided tours only. So you can't wander around and just kind of have fun like we usually do. So we haven't really gotten to the point where we're making appointments, but we love to go to the zoo. We like to go to the museums. We like the butterfly houses and all that other stuff. But it just, you know, it makes it a little bit confusing as far as making the reservations and everything. They're required. You have to wear the mask and everything else, which is fine. But we just haven't gotten around to starting to do that yet. So we're kind of on the sidelines. So the masks are required for anybody that's over 9 years old. And really, they're recommended for any children that are 3 to 9. So they're required at one point, but recommended earlier than or younger than that. So for more information on the opening of the Butterfly House and making your appointments so you can go and wander around, you can go to butterflyhouse.org. And Butterfly House is actually part of the Missouri Botanical Garden. So you can probably go through that way as well. So if you do have questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head out to Oakville and go into Ken's yard. Hi, Ken.
Yeah, yes, sir. I get a limelight hydrangea tree.
Mm-hmm.
I planted about 2 months ago. It's about 4 foot high. Got shoots coming out of it. Real pretty. But I got a couple of leaves with holes in it. Like 4 of them, and like 3 more of them are curled up. What do you think? Is to spray with 7 or something, or what do you think?
Well, you can spray with 7, but again, that's a contact killer. So if you're not spraying it directly onto the insect, you're just spraying for the sake of spraying. So probably the leaves that are curled, I'd unroll them. And look, and anybody, if you're going to start spraying with, let's say, the idea that you probably have insects on the always spray the underside of the leaf as opposed to the top of the leaf, and also go out and check your plant materials early in the morning or later in the day for basically insects to find out exactly what's going on.
Should I take a few of those leaves, or just take this, snip them off? Or
yeah, you could. I mean, it's if it's only a few, if it's a lot, definitely don't, because a few holes is not going to make that much difference. The holes are not what's, I mean, that's not what's going to cause a real problem if there's a few holes. Those leaves are still going to be functional as far as using sunlight to make chlorophyll, food to, you know, to help your plant get established.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
Certainly. My pleasure. And now let's go over to Carlisle and into Joe's yard. Hi, Joe.
Yes. Morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Thanks for your show, and thanks for your service to our great country. Mike, my question this morning is, I've got an ash tree, and I had a tree service come out to take down a tree that died in our yard, and he trimmed this tree. We had some dead branches. It's a real a nice tree in our yard, and we hate to lose it. However, he did tell me it's got the emerald ash borer. I did get a product that he recommended from one of the big box stores. Bear makes it.
Mm-hmm.
We treated it with that, but he said if it doesn't come out of it, well, that tree's probably going to die. It's still got a chance, but I just thought we'd give you a call and see if you had any advice or recommendations.
So you're using a systemic, so in other words, it's going up through the root system. Because the emerald ash borers, they basically attack the top of the tree where the classic borers, you know, go in the lower part of the trunk. So he must have been high in the tree to know there was emerald ash borers there.
Well, actually, some of the bore holes that we saw were actually about 4 feet up the trunk. It's not a real big tree, so maybe about 20 feet. So
that's not emerald ash borers. That's that okay. Low. They're near the top of the trees. So that's a borer.
Right.
I mean, or it could be sapsuckers. Are the holes like about a, you know, 1/8 to 1/4 inch in a row, horizontal row?
No, they were random,
okay.
And we did see some up high, and he trimmed out the dead branches for us, you know, got all rid of the dead.
Well,
but,
he's there,
yes,
and he saw it, but just generally, the emerald ash borer damage is going to be at the top of the tree, not lower down on the trunk.
Yeah, the damage, I would say, Mike, you're correct on that, is up high, the branches he took out.
Right.
But I was just going by, we did see one hole there low on the, well, one or two holes lower on the trunk, probably about between 4 and 5 feet. So,
yeah. So
I did,
if you,
we just stick like a tool down in the hole, like a scribe, and they go in about, I could feel about, a couple, about an inch or two.
Generally, they don't go in that far. They usually, I mean, the borers are going to try to stay where the veins are. So they go in, but they kind of run just below the bark and the xylem and phloem, the veins. But anyway, so this guy's there. He saw it. You've already done this systemic, but probably depending upon what type of systemic you use for the emerald ash borer control, read the package, read the label, and see if this is something that needs to be reapplied every year.
That's correct. It says every 12 months on
okay,
it.
Okay, yep. Great. So you're up to snuff.
That's about all we can do for it then, Mike, is
right.
What you're saying?
Pretty much.
Okay. Well, hey, Mike, thanks again.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
And
bye.
Now let's go. Let's try to get another call in before we need to do a break. Tom and O'Fallon, how are you?
Thanks for your help here. I've got a hostas. I want to move to the west side of my house. And I got a tree there, but I'm going to get sunlight maybe 2 hours at the most, but it'd be afternoon sun, possibly 1:30 to 2:30. You think they'll do all right there?
Are they variegated? So in other words, do they have white stripes or anything in them?
Some of them do, some of them don't. I wanted to put an Empress Wu there because of its size.
Right.
You think it'll work?
Yeah, just, you know, the variegated ones could sunburn just even in that short a period of time of that direct sun, you know, in the heat of the day. So just, you have to be really, you know, I mean, conscious and careful.
Okay. But you think the Empress Wu will do good there?
Yes.
And a sum and substance, it should have no problem there either, right?
No, it shouldn't have any.
Okay,
you know,
great.
And any of them with the bigger, you know, sort of the gray-blue leaves should be fine, like Big Daddy and all those guys.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for your help. You have a good day.
Yes. Yeah, sum and substance, for people that don't know that variety of hosta, is one that kind of has a yellowish cast to it. So anyway, Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
St. Louis's weather station, KMOX.
Speaking of weather, folks, it's too dry. Get those irrigation systems going. And if you have an automatic irrigation system, don't run it every morning for 15 minutes. That water will not penetrate deep enough into the ground to do any good at all. So water for like 45 minutes twice a week rather than every day for 15 minutes. That's a waste of time. All that water does is evaporate and go up in the air. So don't water that way. Let's head out to St. Charles and go into Karen's yard. Hi, Karen.
Good morning. I have a question about our hibiscus. The plant right now is in a pot that's about 14 inches in diameter, 12 inches deep. It is full but kind of crowded. So should I go with a bigger pot? And need to find out, and when is it good to transfer it now, or should I wait till the season is pretty much over?
Is this a tropical one that you have to bring inside in the wintertime?
Yes.
Okay. So I would say just leave it alone. You don't need to put it in a bigger pot or anything else. The size is pretty darn adequate. Maybe in a couple years you might want to put it in a bigger pot, but for the most part, my recommendation would be in that, you know, that type of circumstance would be every few years just pull the plant out of the, you know, out of the pot, maybe do some root pruning on it. You know, basically do that like in April, right before you bring it outside, and or right after you bring it outside, and then just, you know, keep it in that same size pot.
Oh, okay. Good enough. Thanks for your help.
Sure. Yeah, putting things in bigger pots is just, it creates a nightmare from the standpoint of weight and everything else, and a lot of times it doesn't help. If you decide you want to put it in a bigger pot for whatever reason, only get a pot that's about 1 inch bigger than, you know, in diameter than the one that's currently in. Let's go to Mike's yard in South County. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
Good. I'm following up on a question previously regarding having a tree taken down.
Uh-huh.
We had about a 35 to 40 foot pin oak taken down in October of last year from our front yard. They ground the stump and he threw topsoil on it and some grass seed, and I think he actually left some of the wood chips in there. Grass came up a little bit, needless to say. There's nothing there now.
Right.
I was going to leave it sit until either the fall of this year or spring of next year. Maybe dig it out, put more topsoil, and then some sod over it. Would that work?
For probably 2 years, and then this, it'll just disappear again. So it's just you, growing, you know, anything on a where a tree was is virtually a waste of time and a waste of energy. Now, of course, the sod farms and everybody else is seed producers, and they love it because you're just going to have to keep doing it, but it's not going to work.
Sure. So I got a big circle in my front yard.
Right.
What do you suggest?
You could try ground covers if you want to. I would say just don't look at it, and that way it won't bother you. But no, I'm just being a little bit facetious. But in reality, there's not too much you can do.
Okay.
I mean, until this thing, until the wood starts dying, and the root systems, even though the stump's been ground out, the root systems obviously move laterally. They could stay viable, you know, each year a little bit less and less and less for multiple years, 3 to 5 years after the tree's been cut down and the stump's ground out. So you're going to have, you know, problems in other places as well, other than right where the tree trunk was.
Right. Okay, I appreciate the input.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's you know, I wish if I could come up with something for this type of circumstance, I wouldn't have to do this show again ever. I could just be a billionaire. And so, of course, there is one thing you could do: AstroTurf.
You cut down on the grass cutting, also.
Exactly.
All right, thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And now let's go out to Baldwin and into Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
We had a question. We put in, I'm not going to pronounce it right, a wonderfully flowering perennial coreopsis. Is that right?
Coreopsis?
Coreopsis, yes, sir.
Right.
The Coreopsis uptick gold is just really prolific bloomer. But I think part of my question was answered by the lady earlier. So far, we have not, the flowers last forever, and one of the questions was going to be about deadheading it, but as you know, they have a long stem.
Right.
And I think earlier you mentioned if you want to take, the, you know, cut it back, cut the stem back, correct?
Right.
Okay, well, I mean, they're just doing wonderful. We put about six of them in, and they're prolific flowers and last long. But my main question is, and I'm way ahead of schedule, is... after the foliage dies back, or at what point, and what do we do in the fall? Cut them down to ground or whatever?
You can cut them to the ground. That's an aesthetic call. You don't have to do that because they're going to die and break off anyway. You're going to have to get rid of them probably just, again, from an aesthetic call when the new growth begins the following spring. But you don't really have to do too much to them at all. They pretty much take care of themselves.
Really? Well, that's good. So you're saying that even when a new growth appears in the spring, I don't have to remove the old growth, or?
Well, it's you don't have to. Generally, people do because they don't want to look at it.
Right, right. So what is the best? Wait till spring, or can I? Although they're pretty hardy, apparently. Yeah.
I would say probably do it in late fall around Thanksgiving or something when you're out there raking your yard and everything else. Just cut it off at that time. That way you want to fool around with doing it in the springtime.
Okay, and at ground level or an inch, leave
probably,
an inch remaining?
Yeah, I'd probably leave an inch.
Okay, sir. And then one other real quick question. We're fertilizing all the stuff, lantana and all that, once a week. Is that too much?
Yes.
With a liquid fertilizer?
Yeah, that's too much. Probably every 2 weeks would be, you know, ideal. Every 3 weeks would probably be adequate.
Oh, okay, Mike. Thank you so much for your show.
Sure. My pleasure. And thanks for having me on your show. And now let's go to Sunset Hills and to Phyllis's yard. Hi, Phyllis.
Thank you so much for your show.
Sure. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on your show. And now let's go to Sunset Hills and to...
Hey, Phyllis.
Hi there. Hi. Thank you for your service. My question is about my hydrangea. It has rust dots on the stem. It got cut back several years ago by accident, and now I have no blooms and no buds.
Do you know which variety of hydrangea it is?
Well, I don't. It's usually kind of a purple blue when it bloomed.
So how old is it?
Oh, I'm sure it's maybe 10.
It could be the point where it's not going to flower anymore, even though it's got spots on the stems or anything else. Those hybrids like that, you know, the blues and the pinks and things along that line, they have a somewhat of a limited life. Not as far as living and producing leaves, but as far as flowering goes. Now, are you fertilizing?
Well, I had been, and then I read where it said to put aspirin in a gallon of water and put that out as opposed to chemicals.
Well, aspirin's a chemical. That doesn't make any sense.
I saw that on on the internet.
So that's crazy.
I tried that.
So basically, if you want to keep the color good, you want to use aluminum sulfate, which is not a fertilizer, but also I'd get a fertilizer for acid-loving plants.
That's what I had been using.
Yes. So that's when you're going to have better success. And to keep the color, you know, the color, that's what the aluminum sulfate is for.
Okay. Okay. Now, the leaves are very healthy.
Right.
They're real green. There's no bugs or holes or anything.
Right. So it's just basically a matter of maybe the nutrition, you know, level is down. That's why I'm saying fertilize. And just if they do flower, you want to make sure that you're going to get the color you want. That's why I'm saying use the aluminum sulfate. But it's crucial to use an acid-based fertilizer. So there's all kinds of different companies that make fertilizer for acid-loving plants. You can use it on hollies, boxwood, azaleas, hydrangeas, all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, I had all of those and a lot of evergreens. Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your service.
Certainly. And good luck with that. And let's take another call and go to St. Charles and go into Linda's yard. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I appreciate your calls or taking the calls. I've got a problem with the elephant ears again.
What?
Well, I think I put two little things in a big pot, two little root things, and there's five things coming up, five plants coming up. How do I divide those?
I wouldn't. Just leave them.
Really?
No, just leave them.
Okay. All right, because some are really tiny and some are big, but...
Right, so if you start digging and fooling around with them this time of year, they're just coming up and probably have only been growing for maybe a couple weeks. So at the end of the season, when you dig them up to bring them inside, if that's what you do, then you can take a look at it and you can see where the individual bulbs are sort of connected together. Then you can divide them. This time of year, just leave them alone, fertilize them, and keep them well watered.
Okay. All righty. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Certainly. My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Get ready for another Cardinals Classic game, sponsored by Lux Galore International. Tonight, from 1967, it's Game 1 of the World Series between the Cards and Red Sox. Hear it here, Emron Pregame Show at 6, on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
Let's head to South St. Louis and go into Joan's yard. Hi, Joan.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I put down sod this a week ago Thursday. I'm wondering, when is it, are you supposed to eat it?
You're kind of breaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I put sod down last Thursday.
Okay.
Fescue, and I'm wondering when do you start to either weed and feed it or fertilize it?
Just leave it alone. Right now, you're trying to get it established. Now, did you work up the soil before you laid the sod down on top of it?
I took three times. Okay. I put compost down.
Okay, perfect. So basically, just go out and every day for the first couple weeks, for probably 2 weeks, water it. Then start watering just every 3 or 4 days. And then probably since this is a cool season lawn, you're not going to fertilize it during the summertime at all. And so you're going to fertilize when we hit late August, early September with the fall feeding for cool season lawns. As far as weed control, you can do the weed control. Just do spot treatment. Don't just spread, let's say a weed control over it. But I probably wouldn't do that for at least a month or so.
Okay. That sounds good, because I thought I heard you say that a couple weeks ago, but my neighbor keeps giving me fertilizer to put on it, and I'm like, I don't think I'm supposed to do that.
No, don't do it. You'll kill it, basically.
All right. Thank you so much.
Sure. And the reason why I ask you that, too, is there's a house close by. I walk every morning, blah, blah, blah. But there's a house close to me that laid some sod down, and they didn't do anything to the soil. at all, and they just laid the sod on top of it, it's going to be dead in about 4 or 5 days. So anyway, enough of that stuff, and let's go now to Redbud, Illinois, and into Rick's yard. Hi, Rick.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I need the advice on our weeping cherry tree. I'm going to say about 15 years old. The base of the trunk is around 8 or 9 inches. It's
wow.
Really quite a tree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's just done wonderful with a huge canopy, and I have to keep it constantly trimmed to keep it from reaching the ground. But this year early, about a month ago, I started noticing on the backside of the tree closest to our house, the leaves there was no leaves on some of them. And then now the last month, half of the tree has lost all its leaves that it's have curled up, brown, dropped off, and only the front half of the tree has life in it. It sits close to our house. It gets sun from the east, and about 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, it's in the shade.
Basically, the backside of the, you know, which is next to the house, is not getting
yes.
adequate sunlight, so that's why the tree dumps the leaves. They're not helping. They're not, you know, all they're doing is creating a nightmare problem for the tree in and of itself. And that's why I never recommend okay. planting, you know, any kind of trees or even shrubs, you know, close to houses, because they can't get any light back there. There's nothing at all you
yeah.
can do.
Oh, my. Well, you know, for all these years, it's just been a beautiful thing. And
right.
This year is the first time we saw it.
Right, and it's an aging thing. It's, you know, the branches as they
yeah.
you know, get bigger and wider and everything else, then there's less and less light on the backside.
Okay. Wow. So we need to get the tree out of there.
Well, you either that, or if there's a window right there and you're looking out, you're looking at the sort of the skeletized Charlie Brownish tree.
Yes, we are.
Right. So yeah.
yeah.
So
yeah. All right, I think you've answered my question.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
It's unfortunate, but a lot of times people don't realize, you know, foundation plantings and planting things too close to the house, ultimately they're going to have an experience like what you did. Let's head out to Diana, and she lives in St. Charles. Hi, Diana.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm interested in getting a couple of crepe myrtles. What sun exposure do they like the best?
They would prefer full sun all day long, every day. They can take, you know, part shade, but they're going to do much better in the full sun.
I had them at my old house, and they were exquisite. I just can't begin to describe how beautiful they were. And they were facing north. I want to get it right this time.
Well, if they were beautiful and they're facing north, I mean, it's just they need to be in as much light as they possibly can. So, in other words, they don't want to be underneath. They definitely don't want to be underneath trees, because the tree roots compete with them, and that's not a good sign. So, you know, just wherever you can get them and get them in the most sun possible, that's what you want to do. And realize it's going to take a couple years for them to get established and really perform well.
Okay. Yeah, they were planted new when I bought the house. My contractor put them in.
Right.
And they were up against the house, but the house got morning sun.
Right. So that was adequate sun. It worked out perfectly. But I would probably not push them up, like I was talking with the gentleman just now. If you get them up too close to the house, crepe myrtle, it doesn't matter, because basically, you know, it doesn't matter as much as it does with a tree. But because they go through their period and they're only doing well in the summertime as far as the aesthetics and everything else. So, again, just as much sun as you possibly can get them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep. Dig the hole 3 times the diameter of the root ball, but only about 80% is deep. So the top of the root ball is above the surrounding ground. Let's go out to Chris's yard in Arnold. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I planted 4 daisy bushes last year along the foundation of the house. The plants look great, but now that the flowers are coming up, 3 of them have like 20 to 30 buds. One of them has 6 or 7 buds.
Just, you know, it's kind of like in my family. I had a sister and a brother that had red hair. I have, you know, my color hair. My brother had a different brownish hair. So it's just one of those kind of things, a quirky thing. If the plant looks healthy, then that's about all you can do. You know, So why it's not really producing the amount of flowers, it may be planted a little bit deeper than the other ones, but for the most part, if it looks healthy, then there's not too much you can do other than that. I'm assuming you're fertilizing.
Yes. Okay. And when do I actually cut, if I want to bring them inside, do I wait till it's a full flower or like halfway? Is it,
If you don't, I would probably not wait till it's full, but at least 3/4 of the way out. If the bud is still too tight, it may not open up inside.
And how far down the stem do I go to cut?
Probably don't cut off more than half the stem.
Okay.
So probably, even though you may not be getting, the length of stem that you want, just put them in a smaller vase.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Certainly. And now let's go to North County into Steve's yard. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you doing? I had an idea of cutting some 55-gallon drums, plastic ones, in half and using them as like a planter box. I want to kind of put them on the property line as a privacy type thing. Is there something that would work in there that wouldn't get no higher than maybe 8 or 9 foot tops? And would something work in a 55-gallon plastic drum cut in half?
Yeah, 55-gallon plastic drum is fine as long as you drill holes in the bottom of it so there's drainage. Also, before you plant, you want to put about 6 inches of rock at the bottom. So you're drilling holes, putting rock, and then pretty much, if you want to have, something, you could use yews, you could use arborvitae, you could use several different things. They should do fine in there. A big drum is just like a big plastic nursery pot. It just has to have drainage holes, and you have to have the bottom part of it, with like a couple inches of rock.
Okay. Do you have any idea of, I don't even know what arborvitae is, I'd have to look it up, but I mean something that would get up like 7-8 foot tall?
Yeah, the arborvitae will. I mean, because it's going to, basically, they get bigger than that. Don't get the green giant because it gets massive. But by having them in a pot, that kind of restricts or bonsais them and keeps them from getting as big as they would if they were planted in the ground.
Yeah, I had Rosa Sharon's in there now, but I've got trees there, and the tree roots are just so bad, they're just busting up my Rosa Sharon's where it was just killing them.
Right.
And so I thought, maybe I can use 55-gallon drums and put in there and, just take care of it that way, but I didn't know whether that would work or not.
Yeah, it will, and just make sure you put plenty of drainage holes.
Right, in the bottom and there, because I was even going to maybe have to put something underneath them to kind of level them a little bit, so it's not going to exactly maybe be sitting right on the ground itself, so it'll still drain that way, but I thought something about sand or gravel in there to help that drain out, so.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, don't use gravel. Gravel's too small. Use like B rock, which is about 2-inch rock. Don't use P gravel. That's too small.
Okay, D rock.
Yeah, B.
Or B rock,
right.
Okay. And just put a couple inches of that in the bottom.
Yeah, it's like river rock. It's just tan brown rock.
Yeah, Merrimack gravel. Yeah, I got that all around my yard anyway.
Okay,
and my other flower thing. So, all right, well, thank you very much.
Certainly. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, Mike Miller on KMOX.
Down to Oakville and to Linda's yard. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Mike. Good morning. Last fall, I think it was like maybe the first week of November, our church had a whole garden that we planted of shrubs and trees, and we're having a problem with the tall Taylor junipers. We did about 6 of those, and probably half of them have brown or some brown at the top. So I'm having really trouble getting hold of the, the nursery. I did talk to a person at the nursery, and she said put some more root stimulator on them, which we used, and we amended the soil, with compost at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I was questioning is I was part of the planting, but not part of when they put the landscape material down and the mulch, and they had that landscape material just totally up to the, the trunk of the trees and then the mulch up there too. And she told me to take, the owner of the nursery told me to take, well, she didn't even know that was like that because they did not install these plants. So she said, dig down about 5 or 6 inches and see the moisture level. And we recently got a group of people together who are keeping them, watered for sure. I don't know about you know, people up at church actually doing it because the church was closed. But anyway, so is that the moisture level is good now, but she also suggested, the owner suggested, putting a hose on them at like a really slow, like a little more than a drip for about 20 minutes for each one. But what about this landscape material right around the trunk and the mulch?
So are you talking about landscape fabric when you're saying material? So
yeah.
It's like a cloth?
Basically. Yeah, it's pretty heavy, too. I know it's getting moisture through it, but,
right.
You know, it's right around the trunk. Like, it looks like they started around the trunk and then fanned it out.
Yeah, they should probably be, I mean, pulling it back out a little bit. You know, running a hose, you know, and a drip for 20 minutes, I don't think that's going to do all that much good. And but probably I'd do it a little bit longer than that, once a week, especially during the heat of the summertime. And just simply realize anything that's brown is never going to turn green again. So that's not going to do a bit of good for the aesthetics of what's going on right now.
Well, there's going to be people coming on. The staff at the church, the maintenance man, would do the 20 minutes like on Monday. And then I have people coming on Wednesday and Friday to do additional watering since it's, you know, brand new garden. Most of the other stuff looks fine.
Right.
But it's just these Taylor junipers. But when we looked that up on the internet, it said, well, maybe, you know, it's what you're saying, but it said don't cut the brown off of them. That would kill them for sure. So I don't know. I think we'll probably lose one. The whole top of it's brown. The rest of it's green. But the other ones have brown, like, you know, a little bit, like, throughout. So
right.
Should we cut that off? Should we not cut it off?
I would just leave it alone for right now.
Okay.
And just, you know, next year, to make a decision at that point. But these have been installed too recently, so just leave them alone.
Okay, but the watering, you know, do you suggest pulling back all that landscape material at least like maybe about 5 or 6 inches?
It's not going to do that. It's not going to make that much difference, to be honest.
Oh, well, what about the mulch? Should that be right up?
Yeah, I don't like mulch right up next to a trunk.
I knew you did.
You know, 4 or 5 inches away is adequate.
Okay. And so we just kind of continue. I know we don't want to overwater them, but I don't think that was the case. But the soil, you know, the soil on the one that I took back all this from, the base of the tree, it was pretty much clay.
Right.
So when I was, like, working on that, I put in some more compost to
good.
It.
That was perfect. And then when they were planted, they should have been planted high, the top of the root ball above the surrounding ground.
Yeah, seeing on the internet, it says it can be level.
No, not here. Not with our soils, no.
Yeah, we had a lot of different people working on this deal, so
right.
I don't know.
So, well, good luck with that. Yeah, just kind of leave them alone. You know, water them. Just make sure they don't go through any kind of drought stress at all because, I mean, that's kind of the worst thing for newly installed plants. So, anyway, good luck with that. And sorry, Kathy, Tom, and Yolanda, we're not going to be able to get to you today. But everybody, as you're walking outside, make sure that your irrigation system's on and running for extended periods of time, or if you're running sprinklers and stuff like that, extended periods of time because you want the water to drop deeply or go deeply into the soil. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.